Coming up on today's show.
That's the beautiful thing about music and art is there's no right way to do it. You got to do it however is most authentic to you and what you're trying to create.
Welcome to another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment, featuring interviews with guests who are having success in entertainment, primarily music. I am Bruce Wozniak, talking to guests who are singers, songwriters, musicians, recording artists, and more from the worldwide music community. Get in touch with me by writing to podcast@nhte.net, or instead of email, you can DM me through the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account. Joining me today on location in the Florida Panhandle at the Pensacola Beach Songwriters Festival, my guest is a Nashville-based singer, songwriter, guitar player who 2 years ago this month won the Josie Award for Folk/Americana Single of the Year. Last year, she signed with Smash Farm Management and performed in December 2023 as part of an event that featured Ashley McBride and Thompson Square, among others. In addition to here in Northwest Florida, she has been on the road of late, including 11 shows in South Carolina in August alone, as well as having played in May down at the Key West Songwriters Festival. She released a single early this year and has another new song on the way. You've been hearing her Josie Award-winning song, Symptomatic Dream. Welcome to Now Hear This Entertainment, Carlisle Griffin.
Hi, Bruce. How are you?
Wonderful. I shouldn't say that. I'm not wonderful. You and I are both, this is not a good time for us to be doing this interview with our voices.
That's okay. They don't need to know that.
I just had the fortune, audience, of seeing Carlisle perform in a round that she did here at the festival right before this, and I did a 75-minute promoting a music career workshop this morning, so both of our voices are tested. But
yeah, we're going to do our best.
This is new. This is a guest drinking coffee and me drinking hot tea, so this is like a little fireside chat
kind of thing. I love
it. Even though we look out that door and we see a parasail or whatever that thing is called, and the water, and
Well, this is, for me personally, one of my favorite places to be. I grew up down at the beach, so it's where I feel very at home.
Nice.
Here.
Nice. Well, thank you so much for taking time away from the Songwriters Festival to sit and talk with me today. Let's get started by having you share with the audience all about the song of yours that was just playing called Symptomatic Daydream.
Sure.
Cool title, by the way.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I wrote that song, I believe, when I was a junior in college. And I don't really remember what all was going on at that time when I was writing the song, but it had a couple of different lives, actually. And the summer before I moved to Nashville, I was living in Charleston. I was playing down there and bartending, and wanted to cut a couple of demos of some songs that I had recorded before I moved. And that was one that I took into the studio. And when I first wrote that song, it was in a completely different chord progression, completely different melody. The only thing that was the same was the lyrics. But on my way to the studio, I heard a song by an artist called His Golden Messenger. And the song is called Glory Strums. And I just love the way that that song was produced. I love the vibe. It was kind of what I wanted. What I heard more for that song than what I had already created. So when I got to the studio, I sat down and tried to figure out how I could emulate that kind of sound for my own song. And so it morphed into a totally different animal when I put that demo down. And the funny thing about it is the comment that I get the most about that song is how much it sounds like Fleetwood Mac, which was not at all intentional, but is quite funny because Fleetwood Mac is probably my favorite band of all time.
Whoa.
So it's just funny the way that worked out. But I cut that demo, and then a couple months later, I moved to Nashville, and I was working at a bar. I was working in Live Oak in Midtown in Nashville, where I think you saw me play last year. And had not been working there, but maybe 2 weeks. And there was a girl on stage. Her name was Allison Park. And I was happening to work at the register that was a little bit closer to the stage that night, so I could pay a little bit more attention. And I really liked what she was doing. So when she got done, I went over and I said, hey, like, I'm brand new to town. I just moved here a couple weeks ago. I really loved your music. I just wanted to know if you'd be interested in maybe getting a coffee or something next week. And I'd just like to ask you a few questions, you know, about your experience in Nashville and that kind of thing. And she was so gracious. She said, of course. We exchanged numbers. I met her for coffee a couple days later. And she said, I'm playing a writer's round tonight at Belcourt Taps. My buddy's running it. You should come, and I'll introduce you to him, and then maybe we can get you, you know, up on stage or something. So I went that night, and she introduced me to her friend. His name is Joel Jorgensen, and I was talking to him a little bit, and he said, well, I have an opening for my round next week, so why don't you send me, you know, whatever you've got, just so I can kind of know who to put you with, what your sounds like. So I sent him that song. I said, this isn't finished. I just cut this demo before I left. It's still in a pretty rough state, but this is the most recent thing that I have to show. And sent that over to him, and he called me the next day, and he said, what are you planning to do with this song? I said, well, I don't know. I was kind of hoping to put it out at some point. It's, you know, I don't really know yet. He said, well, I really, really like this song, and I think it could be really great. Mm. I'm a producer. Also, do you have any interest in maybe working up a finalized version of this song? I said, 100%. So that kind of started our working relationship right there. And a couple days later, I went in and we started recutting vocals. And he knew a lot of great musicians in town that came back in. We ended up keeping, I think, the original drums and the original bass line that was on that first recording, but everything else was recut.
Wow.
And then that gave us the song that you hear out on streaming platforms, which is Symptomatic Daydream. And that was the one that won me the Josie Award the following year, which was crazy.
I have so many follow-up questions. Please drink your coffee while I say all this. But I have so many follow-up questions. The entire episode is going to be all of the follow-up questions that I have right. from everything that you just said. But before I get to them, mm-hmm. it's important, since I was talking over it, we didn't play the whole song. Just share with the audience, you know, what the story is behind Symptomatic Daydream.
Yeah, I mean, the gist of it is probably a love that maybe you are only aware of for someone else. It's kind of just, I'm trying to remember because I haven't listened to it in a while and I wrote it so long ago. I probably should have refreshed. Listen to my own
Ask
song.
Me tomorrow after I perform it at the finale.
Right,
of the festival.
Right. Yeah.
So, audience, go look it up on all the streaming
platforms. Yeah, do better than me and listen to it.
That's okay, because I'm going to forget all these follow up questions anyways if I don't ask them. So, you said that you heard a song on the radio by mm-hmm. someone else. I'm fascinated by that because I have heard songwriters that say, don't turn the radio on. I've got a song idea in my head, and I don't want to be influenced by mm-hmm. something else that I hear for fear of writing to sound like that. And obviously, that's not the Carlisle Griffin school of thought, because you listened to it and you went, hold on, something here that I like for Symptomatic Daydream.
Right. Well, I think it can go either way. And I don't really know that. I mean, now I understand that sort of frame of thought, because it does happen. It's very easy to get earwormed, as I call it, to have something else influence the way that you were thinking about something. But I wasn't looking for it at all. Mm-hmm. And that was the thing I think that struck me about it, was as soon as I heard that song, I went, oh, it was like a light bulb went off. Mm. It's like, that's what this is supposed to be.
Wow.
Yeah. It wasn't like I was actively, like, the song was already done.
Yeah.
In my brain at that point, I was just minding my own business, taking a happy little ride to the studio. I didn't know. And it hit me like a freight train.
So just clarify, though, you were taking a ride to the studio. So you went and you did redo it different from what you originally thought it was going to be in South Carolina, and then did it differently again in Nashville.
No, it was the same in Nashville. So when I went to the studio in Charleston, I had it set one way, and I showed up, and while I was in the studio, completely changed it.
Changed it because of what you just heard on the radio, but then that's how it still was
in
Nashville.
But then I was able to kind of refine it when I did it again in Nashville.
Yeah.
Because the original demo, the melody and the vocals were a little bit shaky, only because I wasn't solid. I didn't know exactly where everything was supposed to go. But by the time that I got to Nashville, I'd played it out a couple of times and got a lot more comfortable in what it was that I was trying to do and how I wanted to present it and perform the words and all that kind of thing.
So when you said you heard a song and you changed it, And audience, please check out Carlisle's music in its entirety, that whole song. We're going to play another song at the end. Go and listen to her music. You have this amazing, sultry voice. You have this very unique sound. Is that something that you came to in that moment just because of what you heard? Or is it, no, even my original one was still kind of who I am and what you hear today?
Yeah, I think that sort of sound is, well, it's just kind of what my sound is.
Yeah.
I don't think that that changes from song to song. That's the constant, I think.
Well, but way back when, you weren't like all like, oh, I was about to sound like any other country artist. And all of a sudden I thought, wow, just because this one song, like, it's going to be a dramatic shift in what I do from now on.
Yeah. Well, I don't know that I've ever thought of myself as a country artist.
Yeah.
Just an artist in general.
Nice.
Because I have so many different influences that come into my music that I find it very hard to find a home.
Well, and
a singular one.
For the audience, you know, because the minute you put yourself out there, as you know, I really consider myself, you know, jazz. People are going to go, oh, because I really liked her, but I thought she was blues or I thought she was folk or whatever. It's like, hey, I'm just an artist. I just want you to like my music.
Yeah.
Don't get hung up on the genre.
Yeah, I'm just creating art. That's all.
Awesome. Awesome. So we are going to talk, audience, more later about Carlisle and her songwriting style, influences, things like that. For now, though, because we've covered a lot of ground already, but we got to go way back. So ironically, as I mentioned, this morning I put on a promoting music career workshop here as part of the festival, and I made a reference to artists who will say that they came out of the womb singing. I'm holding up air quotes. And in your case, that's not too far off. Share with the audience about your having gotten involved in music at a young age.
Yeah, I started very young in church, I think as a lot of people do. I had my first solo in church. I think I was 5 or 6. And there's actually a clip of it on YouTube. You can find it. Something about high as a bird, I can fly and all that stuff. But that was kind of where it started. And I don't think that I was cognizant of the fact that I loved it at that point.
Mm-hmm.
It was just something that, you know, all the kids at church did. You were in the children's choir and then you were in the youth choir. And then I did a lot of children's theater too when I was young. And as I got a little bit older, I started to realize that it was something that I actually had a little bit of talent for. And my voice started to develop more. And once I got into middle school, my grandmother, I think that I was 11 or 12 at the time, and I just moved back to my hometown of Walterboro, and she really wanted to put me in voice lessons. And we had a teacher in town. Her name was Stephanie Drawdy. She was the high school choir teacher. And my grandmother went to her. She said, hey, Stephanie, my granddaughter, I think she's, you know, got some talent here. I'd really like to see her work on that gift and refine it, and I'd like you to teach her. And she said, well, I don't really teach students that young, typically. I'd like them to be a little bit older. And I don't know what my grandmother said to her, but she eventually agreed.
She said, yes, you do.
She did.
I
don't know. I don't know what the turn
you
was.
You do know, Stephanie.
But I ended up in voice lessons, and I thank God every day for her, because she continued to teach me through middle school and high school and instilled a ton of confidence in me about my voice and my talent, and taught me so much, taught me how to sing, how to protect my voice, how to support it.
Wow.
And she was just a huge, huge supporter of me and continues to be to this day.
And that was one of my takeaways from having seen you perform an hour or two ago. I sensed the confidence in your speaking voice, in your singing voice, in your stage presence. And I did wonder where that came from. And, you know, there's audience, there's two teaching moments here in what Carlisle is talking about that I want you to make sure that you latch onto. One of them is her grandmother stepping forward and saying, we need to get you lessons, because what happens is too many parents, too many grandparents, too many legal guardians, whatever you call them, throw roses at your feet. Oh my gosh, my daughter, my granddaughter, my whoever is terrific. Oh my gosh, my son is going to be the next whoever. And you need to get that uninterested third party to come in and say, not really. And so for your grandmother to say, like I think she's great, but like the real step is she needs to get lessons from someone like Stephanie Drawdy, right? And go do that. So that's teaching moment number one. Teaching moment number two, as you said, so many people do, right? Start in the church. And audience, if you've been with me for a long time, thank you. Let me make that clear. Thank you. But how many NHTE guests talk about having gotten started in the church, and that it's clearly not just worship, it's a good training ground, because you were there like, okay, I guess this is what you do, and all of a sudden you're going, hey, there's kind of something here.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think, at least for me, that was a great place to start, simply because it was a space where I wasn't going to be judged for any sort of performance. There was no pressure. You were just getting up and sharing your love of the Lord with the congregation, you know? There's nobody out there that's going to tear you down because you sang a wrong note or anything. It's a very low stakes place to start. But also, I had a very supportive group there, and throughout the years have gone back and continued to sing for Christmas services and Easter services and that kind of thing. But yeah, that's definitely kind of where it started. And then as I got into high school, when I had, I call her Draudy. I just call her by her last name, so I'm going to do that now. But I had Draudy as a vocal coach and as a choir teacher at that point. And so I got to do a lot of cool things there. I ended up in two summer intensive programs for vocal performance at the South Carolina Governor's School for Arts and Humanities, which was something that she introduced to me and pushed me to do. And for that, I had to train. I had to learn how to sing Italian arias.
Wow.
And I also had to sing like American, I think they're called art songs, like classic art songs. It's kind of like jazz standards, something equivalent to that. But they're very technical. And so I had to learn how to do one of each to audition and get into that program both years. And then I did a lot of musical theater also in high school, which that leads into the performance and the confidence a lot, I think.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And this has nothing to do with what we're talking about, but I just remembered one more follow-up from everything that you were talking about before, where I said I got this long list of follow-up questions. It's also sort of a teaching moment for the audience, but so many times on this podcast, I say, if this was a video podcast, across the bottom of the screen, it would say results not typical. I mean, later on, we'll get to you making the decision to move to Nashville, but you realized at the time, right, that like it doesn't happen that fast, that you're bartending, this person's like, oh, come and do this, and then all of a sudden, let me check with this guy, and the guy says, I'm a producer, what are you doing with this song? I mean, you realized that, right, that like it doesn't happen that fast.
I got extremely lucky for that whole, I mean, my whole time in Nashville is, the things that have happened to me and the people that I've met since I've been there have really solidified my choice to move, because everything is kind of, to a point, I won't say that everything has gone my way, but a lot of things have fallen into place and have brought me a lot of clarity in making that decision to pursue something that is really difficult to chase. Yeah. And it's never going to chase you back, you know? It's a hard life, but it is the thing that I love.
That's a social media post. It's never going to chase you back. Let's go back to where you were, though, in terms of your younger years, because on a recent episode, I made mention of the fact that a friend of mine had on their Instagram story a reference to Mental Health Awareness Month, and I said on that episode that while I didn't want to correct her and say that that's actually May and not October, I said we should not only focus on mental health awareness one month out of the year. We hear a lot about the power of music. Typically, it's like healing properties, but I'm interested to hear about how you actually used music as an adolescent and in your teenage years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I was growing up, we had moved away for a couple years from my dad's job, because I grew up in Waltsboro, which is about 45 minutes kind of southwest of Charleston. And that was where my mom's from, where my grandparents lived. And we moved away for a couple years, so I moved away from all my friends. And then when I started middle school, we moved back. And so it was kind of an interesting thing to come back to these people that I knew when I was a kid that are grown up like me now. You know, we're not 5 and 6 anymore. We're 11 and 12. And it was hard to acclimate back into that and to get to know everyone again. But as I got older and I got into high school, I always kind of felt like I was separated from my peers in some way. I couldn't really figure out how to connect with a lot of them. And I got all of that sort of frustration out, I think, through starting to write songs. That was just an outlet for a lot of things that I was confused about, that I didn't understand, and continues to this day to be the way that I process things. Because I'm not a I'm not an outside thinker when it comes to the way that I feel. Mm-hmm. It's a more, let me sit in a room with a notebook and a guitar and try to sort through all of this stuff.
So when you were doing that, was it with a guitar? Were you already playing that you were like, I know I'm only 11 or 12, but I'm going to start writing some songs. Was it that quote unquote advanced?
Yes and no. Yes and no. I think in the early days, it kind of just started with things that I would hear in my head and then I'd write them down. Mm-hmm. When I was 10, my grandmother bought me my first guitar and she put me in a lesson or two, but I think at that age I was still a little bit too young to really understand what I was supposed to do with it. Mm-hmm. But once I started, you know, doing that a little bit more, those melodies were coming to me and words were starting to form. And then I picked it back up again and I got extremely interested and started to really learn. I did a lot of YouTube videos and spent a lot of time in my room plucking away at the guitar and started playing some shows around town, just, you know, little community gigs and things at school, and accompanied the choir on a couple of songs and would play guitar in church for things. And yeah, it kind of just blossomed from there.
So cool. So cool. Let me announce a new tour date. I am winding down the 2024 NHTE tour, 10 years of Talkin' Tunes, as I travel around the U.S. celebrating having hit the 10-year anniversary of this show back in February. As this episode with Carlisle Griffin comes out, I will have just returned from being up in Kentucky. Suddenly, we're just over 6 weeks away from my going back out west. Wow. Specifically, I will be speaking at the Las Vegas Writers Retreat. That is for writers of literature, writers of books, not music. Nonetheless, if you or someone you know are interested in attending, DM me through the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account or send an email to podcast@nhte.net, and I will write you back with the link for details and to register to attend. Meanwhile, as an exclusive for subscribers of the free weekly e-newsletter, I recently announced my first dates for 2025. From January 16th to the 19th, I will be in Orlando, where I will be speaking at PodFest Multimedia Expo. Go to podfestexpo.com for details. I would love to see you there. And yes, I'm going to have another new tour date to announce really soon, if not next week, then the week after. So Carlisle, at the start of the show, I introduced you as being based in Nashville, and eventually we will get to your having moved there. But first, share about pursuing music in a small southern town that actually didn't have a ton of resource for children interested in the arts.
Yeah, it was interesting. Because like I mentioned, Girardi created a really, really impressive program at our public high school. She was the choir teacher there for a number of years. She taught my mother when my mom was in high school and taught me and my sister.
Wow.
But outside of that, we had, you know, the children's theater, which I mentioned, which was for ages, I believe, like 5 to 12. But other than that, there wasn't really a huge community for it there. So everything that I learned about music, every opportunity that I got was through that choral program at the high school. We did a lot of workshops that she took us to at surrounding universities. And like I mentioned, I got to go to the governor's school there for a couple of summers and I learned a ton through that. But our school was always very sports focused. So we didn't have a ton of money in that program and had to fundraise a lot of it for ourselves. But she always made a point to make sure that there was something there for us to experience and to work towards. We took a trip to New York, I believe my sophomore year of high school, that we did a chicken bog fundraiser for. And I sold $1,200 worth of chicken bog to go to New York. Which chicken bog, by the way, if you don't know what that is, I don't know how regional that is. It's rice, chicken, sausage, all cooked in like chicken broth and stuff. Doesn't sound fancy, but it's fantastic if you do it right. I digress. We went to New York, and she had set us up with a couple of different things. The whole reason we went on the trip was because she was able to get us a slot opening up for the Rockettes at Radio City Music Hall. So because of her, we all got that opportunity to do a tour of Radio City Music Hall and go up on stage and sing there, which was incredible. And we got to do a workshop with two Broadway actresses, and we performed songs for them, and they would critique us.
Drawdy is a legend.
She is a legend. I'm here to tell you. She's a legend in her own right, and she's immensely talented herself.
But see, I was interested that you said everything I learned. I was waiting for you to say we didn't have a lot of resources, so everything I learned from YouTube or I learned from the internet, and I don't hear you saying that. Is it, oh, yeah, well, I did, or is it, no, I really got everything from her?
Well, I think when it comes to my vocal performance and the way that I show up on stage, a lot of that was her. Guitar, that was kind of more YouTube and outside resources that I was able to source for myself. But she was, I mean, really the only thing that we had there that was supportive of the arts.
We hear so much in the music business about the clock starting to tick on an artist while they're still a teenager. Yet, coming out of high school, rather than pursuing music, you made the decision to go to college.
I did. I had always thought that I was going to do that. It was a big thing in my household. My dad went to Clemson for his undergrad and graduate degree. I grew up going to football games there. I think I went to my first one when I was 3 years old and had always wanted to be a student and have that experience. And I knew at that point that music was going to continue to be a large part of my life, but I didn't feel like I had enough experience yet to just take off and go do it at that point, which I'm so glad that I didn't, because I think that the person that I am now, I developed a lot in those 4 years that I was in school, because I was able to get involved in a lot of programs there at Clemson. I played in a cover band for 4 years. And I sang in a jazz ensemble.
So was this a music degree that you were pursuing at Clemson?
No, I did not get a music degree. I had a minor in music. I majored in communication. I think my dad wanted me to have a degree I could use in case I needed it. But I did minor in music, so I was able to get involved in the choirs there and sang in an a cappella group. And ended up accidentally taking jazz guitar, which influences a lot of what I do now. Yeah, as a minor, I had to do 4 semesters of a private lesson and some concentration, and I chose voice, and I had a wonderful instructor there. Her name was Dr. Lisa Odom, and she taught me a ton. I took 3 semesters of lessons from her, and then she got promoted and could only teach music majors at that point and could no longer keep me as a student because I was just a minor. So I was looking around to see what else I could do. And like I said, I'd kind of at that point taught myself what I knew on guitar, which is basic chords. And I saw that jazz guitar was offered. I was like, oh, well, that's interesting. You know, I like jazz.
So was that maybe where the sound that we hear today has its roots? 100%.
Yeah. 100%. Because I went in and I started taking the lessons, I did a semester of it, and I thought, well, that was great. I learned a ton. I got online to register for my next set of classes and realized that I had to have 4 semesters of the same thing. So that kicked over, and I ended up having to take 2 years of jazz guitar.
Yeah, I better like it if I'm going to take it that long.
Right. But I did. I learned so much from that because I'd never had anybody explain to me how a guitar really works. In terms of music theory, how that is transposed onto the neck of a guitar. Because I did a lot of music theory classes when I was at the Governor's School, and we did some all-state choir stuff in high school as well, where we had to learn how to sight read music. So I kind of had to know what I was looking at. But I could never figure out the way a piece of sheet music worked on a guitar. And my instructor there was fantastic. His name was Adam Knight. He was a classically trained jazz guitarist. And he taught me a lot about different voicings of chords, which is something that I use a ton now in my songwriting. And it kind of just cracked my brain open a little bit because I didn't see a G chord, a C chord, and a D chord anymore. I saw how you could move that in 6 different places along the neck of the guitar.
Yep.
It's no longer in 3 frets. Now you got the whole thing to work with. So that was extremely beneficial in all that I've done now.
But now, with everything that you just said, I want to go back to the part where you said that your father said you should have a degree just to fall back on. It was 4 weeks ago in this show that Alexis Marrero was finishing her college this semester. And she said that that was really the reason that she went, is just because she said nothing's guaranteed. And so she said, you know, might as well have this degree. So you weren't going. You said you didn't go to Clemson to be a music major. It was, hey, this is probably the right thing. And I also admire your courage to say, like, I'm not ready to just finish high school and say I'm going to go start music now. So that was fueled by, this is probably the right thing at the right time. Let's go to Clemson for 4 years and be a different person in more ways than one at the end of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I knew that I didn't want to major in it simply because my passion for music was never going to be a teacher, which is what you use a music degree for, unless you want to be an opera singer, which I also didn't want to do. But I wanted to be involved in it. And so that's why I made the choice to minor in music rather than take that on fully. And there's actually, my grandmother pulled it out the other day. There's a newspaper article from when I think I was 16 or 17 for my local paper. And they asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up. And I said, either a songwriter or a lawyer. Wow. And so that's kind of what I just always thought, you know, if this doesn't work out, I guess I'll just go to law school.
And so then there is the point, audience, in Carlisle's journey where, okay, that was a noble decision that you made to go to college, but now the real work has to start. You graduate from Clemson and you decide to move to Nashville alone. So just talk about that critical point as well as what that experience was like relocating to Music City.
Yeah, absolutely. I struggled a bit figuring out where I wanted to go after I graduated. And I had a friend of mine from Clemson. She and I sang in the a cappella group together. And she had moved up there when she graduated about 2 years prior. And I had gone to visit her earlier in that year before I graduated. And it just turned out that after I graduated in August, she was going to be looking for a roommate. And I said, well, Nashville sounds good. That works for me. I was in Charleston for that summer. I worked, saved some money up, and then packed up everything I had, rolled up there. She was the only person that I knew. Mm. I didn't have a job. And the first couple of weeks were tough because I had no idea what I was supposed to do. I knew nothing about the music business. I didn't know anyone except for her. And I didn't know where to start. Everybody's talking about, oh, you got to network. You got to get your foot in the door. You got to do this, that, and the other. And I was just very, very overwhelmed. But the first key there was I got the job at Live Oak. Mm. And what I didn't know at that point was that Live Oak was a huge songwriter's bar. And so once I started working there, naturally just started meeting people because I was out there in the middle of it all the time.
And because the lesson is, and I know, audience, you're sick of me saying it, but you do go into any place in Nashville and you do expect the bartender to be a songwriter. You do expect the server, the hostess at the restaurant, whatever. Mm-hmm. And so you do naturally meet so many people that, yeah, of course you're doing your bartending job, but oh, by the way, you know, here's my card. Oh, by the way, we should write. Oh, by the way, there's a whatever next week, Tuesday.
Right. Yeah. 90% of the time in Nashville, you're going to find that your service worker is a musician. Which is fun. I think that's very neat.
But I love that you're admitting, you know, how overwhelmed you were when you first got there, because, you know, so many people do get stars in their eyes and so many people do say, okay, I'm going to do it. And there's a statistic out there about how many people move to Nashville every week and how many people move out of Nashville every week. So I think, audience, those of you who are aspiring performers, I think it's important that you hear the real side of it, that someone like Carlisle Griffin goes there and goes, oh, I don't know anybody here other than her, and I don't know where to start. By the way, I need a job.
Yeah. Yeah, it's scary. That's scary for anybody.
I know, by the way, I got to, you know, create new music.
Right. I got to write. I got to be creative. I got to. Yeah. There's so much that goes into it that I think a lot of people don't realize on the back end, but getting there was the hardest part for me, and just figuring out where I wanted to really sit.
How much time went by from when you first went there to the story that you told earlier about, you know, I'm a producer, what are you doing with this song?
I think that would have been about maybe a month or two.
Wow. But here's another thing that I really admire. Okay, so you've already established for us that even before you went there, you already had the sound that we know is Carlisle Griffin music today. I love that you said, and mind you, I have admired the fact that Nashville, please, people, stop painting it as that's where you go for country music. And even this festival, I've been coming to this festival since 2010, and I love seeing the round that you just played in and others that are performing here, where it's not a songwriters festival where there's only country music. And so I love that you said, I'm moving to Nashville, even though I'm not a country artist.
Yeah, well, I think it is a lot more than that. It's just such a hub for the music industry in general. So many people that are influential in that business, that's where they live now. And I liked Nashville because I felt like it kind of had that, it's very similar to Charleston, and it's a big city, but it's got that small town feel. And the music community, I quickly found, is rather small there. It's pretty tight knit. Everybody kind of knows everybody else by some degree of separation. So it felt just a little less intimidating, I guess, to navigate as to like a New York or a
absolutely,
LA
absolutely.
Kind of thing. And yeah, as soon as I got there, I felt at home. I was still nervous and scared and confused, but that feeling subsided the more that I just went out and did it. And
it.
I found that a lot of people were very open and wanted to help. And I think that that's a great part about the music community in Nashville, is everybody remembers how scary it was when they first got there. So the majority of the time they try to be really helpful when somebody new comes into town and they're trying to, you know, put some rights together and make some friends and get on a writers round here or there and stuff like
that.
They
say it's a big, small town.
It is.
And I've seen it firsthand, and I love everything you're saying. This is awesome. I am joined today on location in the Florida Panhandle at the Pensacola Beach Songwriters Festival by singer, songwriter, guitar player Carlisle Griffin. Visit her official website at carlislegriffin.com. I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. Look on her website for the Spotify link so you can go follow and stream her music there, although I would strongly recommend that you support her by purchasing downloads of her original music from iTunes. In fact, follow me on this. On carlislegriffin.com, you will see links to her social media, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. Those are at the bottom of the EPK page. On her Facebook, there's a link to a sort of Linktree type page that has options to go get her music from a variety of services: Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, Deezer, and Tidal. Keep up with Carlisle online for details on when and where you can go see her perform live, and stick around because she's going to tell you about a new song that's in the pipeline. I think I mentioned this last week or the week before, but it bears repeating. Every week you always hear me talking about the Owl app. That's Owl like the bird, except with two W's and two L's. It is a social networking platform that connects people instantly through private one-on-one audio calls. They recently underwent a major update. They're referring to it as Owl 2.0, with new features and having unlocked 6,000 previously hidden experts. Take advantage of this great tool to make valuable new connections. At the bottom of my weekly e-newsletter that I send out every Wednesday, I have the Owl logo there so that you can click on it and go to my website to read an article about Owl and get my invitation code, as well as links to download it for free from the App Store or Google Play. Get that set up on your phone and then call me on there. I would love to hear from you through the Owl app. Carlisle, we heard part of a song of yours at the beginning of the show. We're going to hear another track at the end. But give the audience some additional perspective on your sound by citing some of your musical influences and how they affected your style of your own music.
Sure. Yeah. So as I mentioned, I grew up kind of on the coast of South Carolina, and we spent a ton of time at the beach when I was growing up. And South Carolina has a state dance called the Carolina Shag, which originated in Myrtle Beach, Grand Strand area. And so that is kind of a swing dance of sorts that's done to, I think, Motown type music, like the Temptations and the Four Tops and the Tams and the Embers, anything you put a "the" in front of pretty much. But I grew up listening to so much of that in the summers down there. And my mom was a junior shag competition dancer champion. Her and my uncle danced together, and my dad was a great dancer, great shag dancer. So I grew up around all of that, and I think that sort of like soul music really infused into me. And it's still something that I turn to today. I listen to it quite often. But as I got a little bit older and I started to seek out some of my own music, I found Fleetwood Mac and Stevie Nicks off of an old burned CD of the Tusk album and listened to it on repeat in my truck that I had when I was 15 because the radio didn't work. But learned a lot through that and found that I really love that sort of folky singer-songwritery James Taylor, Joni Mitchell sort of thing. And then the older I got, the more I started to look for some more recent artists that are kind of in that same vein, like Jason Isbell. Huge fan of his. And I've recently been introduced to a band called American Aquarium, who has a lot of that same folky influence. And their songs are just, they're raw and they're real, and they tell a story with their lyrics, and that's what I really love. So I kind of had to find a way to combine those two elements, because a lot of times with soul music, you don't get sort of that descriptive, paint-a-picture sort of word structure that you get in an Americana-type song. Mm-hmm. So I think those are probably my biggest influences that I try to pull into what it is that I'm creating now.
Before the break, you were talking about when you moved to Nashville and what it has been like living there. Tell us about your experience with writing solo versus co-writing in Nashville, especially as it relates to any advice you have for anyone who's thinking they want to move there to pursue their songwriting and music career further.
Yeah, the co-writing was something I got introduced to when I moved to town. I had no idea what that was, because I had only ever written songs by myself. It was a very personal endeavor for me. So the idea of writing a song with somebody else scared the crap out of me. But I got introduced to a couple people, Allison that I mentioned earlier being one of them, and she was my first co-write in town, which was great because she was so knowledgeable about the process. She'd been doing it for a number of years and kind of helped me through that and made me feel very comfortable. And I think that's a big key. For me, at least, it's very difficult for me to write with someone that I don't know, which you end up doing there a lot. And sometimes you get a great song out of it.
Difficult in the sense of just structurally, or difficult in the sense of opening up and being vulnerable and sharing?
Yeah, I think it's really hard for me personally to be vulnerable in those situations a lot of times. I'm in awe of anybody that can do it. And I wish that I had that trait. I just don't have it.
Yet.
Sure. So that's been kind of a learning curve for me. And I still, to this day, do write alone a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think when you get there, co-writing is pushed a lot more than solo writing is.
I always say you're required by songwriting law to co-write in Nashville.
Yes, you are. It is a huge, huge push. But I think there is a lot to be learned sitting with your own thoughts and trying to piece things together. And I would advise anybody that's moving there not to do it because you feel like you have to. That's the beautiful thing about music and art, is there's no right way to do it. You got to do it however is most authentic to you and what you're trying to create. So that's something that I've tried to stand on since I've been there and not let go of that part of myself and my art.
And let's face it, if you have a song and you're sitting at home, you're going to stifle your creativity if you say, all right, well, I'll just kind of bare bones minimum, I need to save this for my next write that I'm doing. Mm-hmm. Write it then.
Just got to get it out.
You don't need someone in the room to do it with you. Yeah.
Yeah. You can always take it into a room and say, hey, I wrote this. Let's polish it up. Let's refine it. And I've done that a couple times.
Especially if it is something very personal that only Carlisle Griffin could write about an experience.
Yeah.
You can't save that for a write for someone that goes, okay, let me kind of get in that headspace.
Right. And a lot of times I'll write a song, and then I've got some really close friends of mine that I'll send it out to, and I'll say, hey, what do you think about this? Do you have any advice? And just bounce it off those that I trust in their own writing, and to give me a little bit of feedback and see how I could make it better. It doesn't always have to be in a room with three or four other people, you know?
Love it. I mentioned in the intro that in May you were down in Key West at the Songwriters Festival there, and now here we sit at the Pensacola Beach Songwriters Festival, and right after you just performed, and you're going to perform here again tomorrow. Talk about this event and being here for it, as well as just what you like about the Songwriter Festival experience, even if that does mean, I love Nashville, but hello, I get to go walk on the beach.
Yeah. Hey, any chance I have to go to the beach, I'm going. And this is my first time down here in Pensacola and here for the Songwriters Festival. And I've gone to the one in Key West for a couple of years now since I moved there. And one thing I love about the sort of festival structure that they have, and I think that Pensacola has too, is that everybody's just a little bit more relaxed and open to conversation. And I get to meet a lot of people here that I might not run into in Nashville, because we just don't run in the same circles or play in the same places or anything like that. Yeah, and you're busy all the time, and everybody's working and writing, and it's hard to make those connections sometimes up there. But we're all here to play songs and to make music, and it's a common ground almost to have everybody here. So that's really my favorite thing. It's been my favorite thing about Key West the last couple years, and also getting sort of a different audience and an audience that's paying attention, because that can be very difficult to find in Nashville, and it can be very discouraging when you're playing in a bar and you're pouring your heart out. And
how wonderful it is when you play just now and you could hear a pin drop.
Yeah.
In there.
Yeah. That feeling never gets old. It really doesn't. So that's something that I love doing, is coming down here, places like it, and playing for rooms that really want to hear what we have to say.
So present day, and we've talked around this a bit, but since I did just get to hear you performing your original songs, talk about your current songwriting process, and you know, maybe who your current favorite artists are.
Yeah, so currently I'm, like I said, I'm still writing alone a good bit, but I've started to study some books on songwriting and other people's processes to refine my own a little bit, because for a long time it was just sort of, if the idea struck, then I'd sit down and I'd work on it a little bit, and I didn't really force myself a ton to write. But since I've moved to Nashville, I'm always wanting to create and make more music. It's more of a desire, I think, than I've ever had. But the inspiration's not always there. So that's kind of why I've turned to studying it more. And I've read a couple books by an author called Pat Pattinson, who's huge on object writing, which is essentially you give yourself a timer, you pick a random object, a door, the ocean, a mosquito, and you write using your five senses and try to be as descriptive as you possibly can. So I've been trying to do a lot of that, a lot of just writing, not necessarily writing songs, but doing a lot of journaling, a lot of just practice, so that when I do sit down to write a song, those things start to come a little bit easier. And the cool thing about that is the more that I do it, I'm able to look back at my notes and look back at pages that I've written and pull out lines and phrases that at the time when I wrote it didn't really mean anything to me, but I'm working on this particular song and, oh, that sticks out to me now. I can use that here. Yeah. So a lot of my process is just creating and creating and creating, so that I have this big pool to pull from when I'm ready to sit down and focus on a particular idea.
Outstanding. Outstanding. Okay. So that's a perfect setup then. I teased this back at the beginning, but you do have a new song that you have in the pipeline. So share with the audience what the title of that song is, what it's about, who you're working with on it, when it'll be out, all the details.
Yeah. So the song that I'm going to be releasing, I think it'll be coming out early next year. We're doing a little bit more work around it right now, but it's called Chaos Over Control. And I got the idea for the title from a movie. I believe it's 6 Degrees of Separation with Will Smith and Stalker Channing. And there's a scene in that movie where Stalker Channing's husband, I can't remember the name of that actor right now, but he's got this really like priceless painting that they're showing Will Smith's character. And it's a double-sided painting. And he's turning it over and he goes, chaos, control. Chaos, control, as he's turning the painting back and forth.
Cool.
And I just thought that was an interesting idea. And so I wrote it down, and I didn't do anything with it for months. It just sat there. But I came across it one night, and I had recently kind of had an old flame come back into my life and was trying to process all of that emotion. And that's kind of where that song came from. It's about, you know, two people that were together and things didn't work out at that time. And so one of them went off and lives were lived, and then they came back together and they said, this time we're going to pick chaos over control and just let this thing play out and see what happens.
So cool.
So it's one that I'm really excited about. It was a solo write, this one was, and it was almost a stream of consciousness. When I finally figured out what it was that I wanted to make of it, I wrote it in an hour.
Wow.
So it was really quick. But I'm excited to bring it to life. I actually recorded it at the same time as I recorded my most recent single, Sweet Fool, that came out in February.
Oh, okay.
We did them both together.
Okay, wow.
So, yeah, these were both also produced by Joel Jorgensen, who did my first song. We've continued to work together, and he's done a spectacular job. And this one's a little bit different, I think. It's different from the most previous one that I put out, just in terms of the vibe. I think that it brings us a little bit more, to me, on an alternative edge. It's got a really heavy bass in it, and the guitars are really forefront, but it's still got some of the elements of my other songs as well that tie it into the artist.
I'm interested in you saying that you're still using him, because is that a case of, if it ain't broke, don't fix it? Why would I go and look for another producer?
Yeah, kind of.
Because, as you know, so many of them in Nashville, and the more that you do play out, the more that people are going to see and hear you and go, I want to work with this girl.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been that, I think. And he's done such a great job. He's done all four of the singles that I put out, and then this one that's coming out soon. And we've, you know, developed a relationship over that time and really got to know each other. So it was kind of a easy thing, to the point where we can talk in secondhand a little bit when I'm trying to get across an idea that I don't know what the professional term for it is. So yeah, that's part of it. And I was just ready to work on those songs and kind of already shared them with him, and he had some ideas and we went on from there. And it's not that I don't know that we'll work together for forever, but that's the beautiful thing about Nashville is, you know, there's always somebody up and coming ready to give it a shot and wanting to work together. And I believe in spreading the wealth and working with everybody that I can and expanding that network. So I'm excited to see what's coming next. I don't exactly know what I'm wanting to do yet. I'm leaning towards doing more of an acoustic type production for my release after this one that's coming up. So just got to wait and see how the chips fall.
So since you just mentioned it, we are going to close with another one of Carlisle's original songs, a track called Sweet Fool, which came out back at the end of February. Before I let you go and I play that song, share with the audience first all about this one, if you would, please.
Yeah, this one was a really fun one. I've got a good friend of mine from college that I played in a band with, and he, I hope he's not going to get mad at me for saying this, but this is the truth. He's a little lover boy. He likes to be in love. He's always got a crush. He's got somebody around, and I am not that way at all. I'm quite the opposite. And so I was, you know, talking to him about it one day. I was like, why do you always seem to be with somebody? He goes, because I just like having somebody around. I said, oh, that's interesting. And then I had a little taste of it myself, and the song just kind of came out of that sort of experience. And the kind of hook of that song is, I see why you want to be in love all the time. So it is a sweet song. I don't write sweet songs very often. I definitely don't write love songs very often, but this one is the anomaly, and it's one of my favorites.
I wonder, your style of music lends itself to there should be piano. Where do you come down on that? Is it, you know, yeah, I want a lot of piano on my stuff? Is it, you're the first person that's ever said that, Bruce? Is it, you know, haven't you listened to my stuff? It's very piano heavy. Is it, you know, I'm trying to learn pianos. What do you think about all that?
I mean, I know a little bit of piano. I never could quite bring myself to learn how to play it. I did a couple lessons when I was in high school. And
can you write on piano?
Yes. I don't do
but
it very often.
Yeah.
I don't do it very often. But I do, in the songs that I have done, I don't know that there's a ton of piano in there. There's a lot of organ involved, a lot of Hammond, a B3 and stuff, which I do love that sound. I've never been super piano focused, I don't think, in the way that I write, but I've gotten that a couple times. I've had a couple people tell me that I play guitar like it's a piano, which I've always thought was an interesting comment.
Yeah. Your guitar playing is quite notable. I'm saying this as a compliment, and I hope people will pick it out. I hope they'll go see you perform live, because you've just got a great thing going on, but I hope people will focus on your lyrics. I hope people will focus on your voice. I hope people will focus on your guitar playing. You know, sadly, it can get lost a little bit, you know, in too big of a production. Right. So I like that you're thinking, you know, maybe you just kind of do acoustic next time.
Yeah. A lot of what I'm writing now, I think, lends itself to more of a stripped sort of production. Because the ones that I have out, we put a lot of time and a lot of thought into the production that went into those. And I'm very proud of them, but I'm kind of ready to do something a little bit on the other end of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. So.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Good for you. Awesome to meet you. Thank
you
so much for making time to be on the show. This is amazing. I'm glad I got to see you perform. Can't wait to come and see you perform in Nashville again, like we did last December, unbeknownst to us when we went up there in the first place. But thank you so much for being on Now Hear This Entertainment.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Folks, with that, I will wrap up another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment. My sincere thanks to singer, songwriter, guitar player Carlisle Griffin. Do visit her official website at carlislegriffin.com. As I mentioned earlier, I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. On her website, tap or click into the EPK section and look down at the bottom for links to her social media. Yesterday, I followed her on Facebook and Instagram, and I'm sure she would appreciate you doing the same. She is also on TikTok as well. Plus, as I said before, on her Facebook, look for the link that will take you to a page listing a number of services where you can get her original music. Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, Deezer, and Tidal. Keep up with Carlisle online for details on when and where you can go see her perform live. You also heard her talking about her next new song, Chaos Control. Keep up with her online for when that will be available to pre-save. For that matter, tell Carlisle that you heard her and her music. I Now Hear This Entertainment. Folks, honestly, I do truly hope that you like this show, that you're enjoying what I'm doing every week on the Now Hear This Entertainment podcast. If you've made it all the way to the end, thank you for having stuck with Carlisle and I, and I'm going to assume that that means that you do like the podcast. You can take action to let me know that you appreciate the work that I do to keep making this show happen every week, every month, more than 10 and a half years without missing once, by going on my podcast website, nhte.net, and then using the yellow Buy Me a Coffee logo that you will see there. This is not a sponsor. It's not affiliated with any brand or chain. It's just a fun way for you to send your support, your thanks to me, including a note that I will see when you utilize that option. You can also just head directly to buymeacoffee.com/BruceW. That's going to do it for episode 557. Thanks ever so much for listening. I'll send you out today with another song from Carlisle Griffin. This is the one she just talked about. It's called Sweet Fool.
Sweet, sweet fool. You know, I always used to think that I knew better than you. Sweet, sweet fool. I must confess, I think you're on to something else. Some kind of breakthrough. I got a taste of that. baby.